Wait! At Kaitano's shout, the two warriors stopped, and for a long moment they faced Falcon with their axes raised while Falcon faced them back.
Globinanta, did you kill my daughter?
If I had killed her, I would not have brought her to you. I would have run with fear from the rightful anger of Kaitano, the great warrior in chief of the mighty Apache.
I think this is true. I think you did not kill her.
Kaitano stabbed his palm at the braves and slowly brought it down. The two Apache lowered their war clubs. Seeing his two would-be attackers backing off, Falcon put his guns away.
Why did you bring her to me?
I met Yaako's gun on the stagecoach as she was returning from school in the east. She was a woman of much courage and much honor. When she was killed, I knew she would want to come back to her own people.
You are a man of courage and honor. I thank you for bringing her here to me and to her mother. Do not leave. After we have seen to my daughter, we will talk.
I'll stay to pay my respects to Yaako's gun. Then we'll talk.
Falcon stepped back, then watched as the village began making preparations for Cloud Dancer's funeral. The first thing they did was take her out of the shroud and wrap her face in a piece of cloth. Next, they completely stripped her and clothed her in a dress that was more in keeping with her Indian tradition. Her hair was parted and brushed smooth with a hairbrush. Her wrists were covered with bracelets and beads, and around her neck, her mother placed a necklace of silver and turquoise. Finally, they laid her on a bed of reeds, and a medicine man circled around her, scattering ashes and pollen to the four cardinal directions. After an hour of silence, a gourd of Tiswin was passed around, and several took a drink. When the gourd was brought to Falcon, he drank as well. He had tasted Tiswin before and knew that it was an alcoholic beverage made of fermented corn and fruit. The chief medicine man stepped into the center of the circle.
Where is this woman now?
We don't know. Where will she be day after tomorrow? We don't know. Where will she be 10 years from now? We don't know. It is not for us to say where she will be. It is for Usen, who resides in the mountains, to receive into Ojo the spirit of this woman.
Two warriors lifted the reed bed upon which the body of Cloud Dancer lay. They started toward the nearby hills, with the entire village following. Falcon followed as well. Once they reached the hills, they set her down, then looked about for a bit until someone pointed. Falcon saw that he was pointing toward a crevice between two layers of rock. The village elders, and especially Kaitano, decided that this crevice would do.
This is where our sister will lie as she waits for Usen.
They rolled Cloud Dancer's body off the litter. For a moment she lay at the lip of the crevice, but several of the villagers pushed and shoved her body until it was well down into the crevice. After that, they covered it with dirt and rocks until the crevice was so completely closed that, to the casual passerby, there was little evidence that it even existed. After Cloud Dancer was interred, ashes and pollen were sprinkled in a circle around what was now her grave. They began at the southwest corner and laid the ashes and pollen down in a rather intricate pattern, the meaning of which was lost on Falcon.
This is the story of the life of Yaako's Gan. She was born at the time of the great burning of grass. Here the elk ran, and here the father of her mother died. Here she went east to go to the white man's school. That was the end of the design, for we do not know what events occurred while she was away.
After the burial, all returned to the village.
Come, Globinanta. You are now my guest.
Falcon knew that he was more than simply a guest. If he tried to leave now, he would be taking his life into his own hands. He nodded at Kaitano.
I'll be pleased to stay with you and honor your daughter with my mourning.
50 miles south of where Falcon was at this very moment was the small town of Sasabe Flat. Sasabe Flat was less than 2 miles from the Mexican border. The town, which had its beginnings in the days when Arizona was a part of Mexico, was considered more Mexican than American. Like many of its counterparts south of the border, Sasabe Flat consisted of 24 or more adobe buildings perfectly laid out around the center square. One end of the square was anchored by the church, the other end by a livery stable. Father Rodriguez and a young altar boy were at the well in front of the church, drawing up a bucket of water. They looked up as Fargo Ford led his band of riders into the town.
Father, did you see those men as they rode by?
Sí, I saw them.
What sort of men are they?
I think they are evil and have about them the scent of sulfur.
Father Rodriguez crossed himself as he watched the men ride toward the center of town. And seeing his priest make the sign of the cross, the altar boy did the same. There was no saloon as such. There was a cantina. And Fargo Ford led his band directly there. All dismounted, except for Ponce.
Hey, Fargo, Ponce ain't getting down.
You gonna stay out here?
What?
Ponce had been hitting the laudanum pretty hard, and he was having a hard time focusing on what was going on around him.
Are you going to stay out here or come inside and have a few drinks? Maybe get something to eat.
Oh, I think I'll come in.
Ponce didn't move a muscle.
Oh, goddamn. Somebody help his sorry ass down.
As Monroe and Casey went to Ponce's aid, Fargo stepped up onto the low wooden porch. Dagan followed him as he pushed through the dangling strings of beads that hung across the door of the cantina. Because it was so bright outside and darker inside, the cantina managed to give the illusion of being cooler. But that was an illusion only. It was out of the direct sunlight, but it was also without any flow of air, so it wasn't any cooler, and might even have been a little warmer than outside. The two men moved to one side for a second, keeping their backs to the wall as they looked around the room, letting their eyes adjust to the gloom.
See anyone you recognize?
Nope. Nobody that'll cause us any trouble.
There's a table back there in the corner.
The two men started toward the table Fargo had pointed out.
Fargo, he's gonna die. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I know it.
Well, what are we keeping him with us for? I mean, look at him when they get him in here, Fargo. He's more dead than alive. If you ask me, all he's doing is just slowing us down.
Hell, Dagan, if you want to shoot the son of a bitch, go out there and shoot him. I ain't gonna do nothing to stop you.
It ain't my place to shoot him. You're the leader. It's your place.
Now, what kind of a leader would I look like if I went around killing my own men?
There were about a dozen people in the cantina. 10 men, counting the bartender, and 2 women. Not one of the people in the place looked American.
Damn. Are you sure we're still in America?
I think so.
You think so? Look around. You see one American in here?
Señor, ¿es esta nuestra América o México?
Territorio de Arizona, Estados Unidos.
Ask her if anyone in here speaks English.
The barkeep overheard the conversation.
I speak English, senor. We all speak English. We are Americans.
Oh, Americans, huh? Boy, you sure as hell can't prove it by me.
Casey and Monroe came in then, half dragging, half supporting Ponce between them. Ponce's arms were across their shoulders, and he was hopping on one leg, dragging his useless leg behind him.
What happened to your friend?
His horse fell on him. Bring us some whiskey and something to eat.
No whiskey, tequila.
Tequila's fine.
The bartender brought a bottle and 5 glasses.
You can take back one of the glasses. Old Ponce here ain't gonna be drinking none, are you, Ponce?
I think I'll come in.
See what I mean? Hell, he's been sucking down so much of that laudanum that right now he don't know if it's daylight or dark outside.
Fargo took a drink, then looked over at the 2 women in the cantina. Obviously bar girls and probably whores. They appeared to be in their mid to late 30s. Both were wearing blouses that showed a lot of cleavage, and skirts split to show long, shapely legs. They had dark hair, black eyes, and olive complexions highlighted by bright red lipstick.
What do you boys say we get us a couple of women?
Good idea. But they seem to be busy now.
I'll take care of that. You and you. You see my friends over there at that table? We'd be much obliged if you'd come and join us for a few drinks.
The two women looked at him for a second, then returned their attention to the men they were with.
Hey! I asked you nice to join me and my friends over at the table.
The señorita is with me, señor.
Yeah? Well, she's going to be with us now.
The Mexican's hand moved toward his pistol.
No, señor. I think she will stay with me.
Fargo found it amusing that the Mexican had threatened him by making a move toward his pistol. As he stared at the Mexican, a big smile spread across his face.
Well, now, mister, you gonna pull that hog leg or just hold your hand over it trying to scare me? Go for it, Mex. That is, if you got any cojones. Otherwise, crawl on out of here like a coward.
Fargo had his own gun out in the blink of an eye. Seeing that he was badly beaten, the Mexican interrupted his own draw, pausing just as his gun cleared leather.
I think you have me.
I think I do too.
Usted mató a Pablo!
Hey, Dagan, what did this whore just say?
She said you killed Pablo.
Damn right I did. And this is all your fault, woman.
Why is it my fault, señor?
If you'd done what I asked you, Pablo here'd still be alive. But because you didn't leave him and come join us, he's dead.
He looked over at the other woman, who was standing halfway down the bar. She too was with someone, but the person she was standing with backed away from her very quickly when he saw Fargo looking toward him.
You. I want you too. I'm inviting both of you real friendly-like to join my friends and me.
Without further hesitation, the two women hurried over to the table to join Fargo Ford's men. In the meantime, Fargo walked over to the bar and stared down at the body of the man he had just killed.
Bartender?
Si, señor.
The bartender closed the distance while keeping the bar between them.
That whore said this man's name was Pablo?
Si, Pablo Bustamante.
Tell me. Did Pablo Bustamante have a wife? Any kids?
No, señor. He was not married. He lived with his mother.
Fargo pulled out $100 from his pocket and handed it to the bartender.
Give this money to his mother. Tell her I'm sorry that her son was so foolish as to draw on me.
The bartender made no effort to take the money from Fargo.
Do you want Pablo's poor mama to do without this money?
The bartender hesitated a second, then reached for the money.
Gracias.
Now, what are you going to tell her?
I will tell her that you are sorry her son was so foolish as to draw on you.
That's a good man. And for the rest of you, if there's anyone in here who does not think this was a fair fight, then step up and let me hear from you. We may as well settle this now.
There were several men in the cantina staring at him, and they had been staring at him from the moment his confrontation with Pablo began. But now, at this challenge, they all looked away.
That's what I thought. Bartender, how about getting some food over to the table? Be quick about it.
Si, señor.
When Fargo returned to the table to rejoin the others, the two women were already there, though the expressions on their faces showed that they were frightened.
Can you imagine that dumb shit pulling his gun on me just to keep a whore to himself? What the hell was he thinking?
Incluso las putas en el infierno no tendrían nada que ver con este hombre.
What the hell did she just say, Dagan?
She said even the whores in hell wouldn't want nothing to do with you.
Fargo glared at the woman, and she shook with fear at what he might do.
You got guts, I'll give you that. But we ain't in hell right now, so I'm more worried about the whores up here. Don't be scared. You can't have no fun if you're scared. Are you scared of me?
Si, señor.
What's your name?
Carmelita.
And you?
Rosita.
Well, Carmelita, Rosita, will this make you less scared?
Fargo handed each of them a $20 bill.
Señor, so much money? Why?
Don't you want it?
Si, but what must we do?
You got a room here?
Si.
Well, when we get to your room, I'm sure we can figure out something to do. I figure between the two of you, you can make me and my friends real happy.
This one too?
Rosita was looking at Ponce. The expression on Ponce's face was devoid of any interest or even awareness.
I do not think he wants a woman.
I think you're right.
Jesus, Fargo. Look at old Ponzi. That son of a bitch looks like hell.
What is wrong with your friend?
Oh, never mind him. He's dying.
Madre de Dios.
The fire in the middle of the village burned brightly. Escaping sparks rode the rising column of heat high into the night sky, mixing their golden glow with the soft blue wink of the stars. The mourning period being over, and true to Catano's referring to Falcon as a guest, he had been invited into Catano's wickiup and treated well by Catano's wife, who had provided him with food and drink. Even so, he still had the distinct impression that he would not be able to leave the village without Catano's approval. Falcon didn't know how much longer he would be required to stay, but he decided he would remain a while longer just to see what was going to happen. If things took a turn for the worse, he would leave with or without Catano's permission. Now he and Catano joined the warriors, who were sitting in concentric circles around the fire. The oldest and those who had established themselves as leaders were in the first circle. As the circles grew more distant from the fire, their occupants were younger and held positions of less importance in the social structure of the village. The women were in the outermost circles.
Globinanta, tell us what you know of my daughter.
I'm pleased to have met and known your daughter. I met her on a stagecoach, and we knew each other only a short time. In that short time, I learned that she was a very smart and very brave young woman. You and the entire village should be very proud of her, and you are rightly grieved, as am I, that such an evil thing was done to her.
Who did this evil?
The leader of the evil ones is a man named Fargo Ford.
Why did you not stop this?
When the stagecoach stopped, I was shot.
Falcon took off his hat to show the scalp wound, a visible scab line through his hair. Several got up and came forward to bend over and personally inspect the wound, and it was a moment or two before the conversation resumed.
The bullet knocked me out. When I came to, I saw that our shotgun guard had been killed, and Yako's gun had been taken by the evil man.
Taken by them? I do not understand. If they took her, why did they kill her?
I believe she fought him. I know this because when the men stopped in Pajarito, one of them had a knife wound in his leg. Some way, Yako's gun managed to get a knife and she stabbed him.
Better she should have stabbed him in the heart.
No, it is better this way. A doctor in Pajarito saw the wounded white man. The white man has gangrene.
What is gangrene?
It's when you begin to die in one part of your body first, and it moves so that your body dies a little at a time until your heart dies as well.
It is good that he has the creeping death. I am glad that my daughter killed the man who killed her.
We must go to war to avenge you, Akoskan.
No, Chitopa.
Yes.
Angrily, Chitopa stood, then walked back and forth within the inner circle.
Why do you say no? Are we women to do nothing? Or are we warriors?
Globinanta, I would ask that you wait in the wickiup. We must speak of this. And the things we say are for our ears only.
Nodding, Falcon stood up, brushed the dirt from the seat of his pants, then stepped into the wickiup indicated by Catano.
I do not believe this white man. I think we should kill him. Give me the word and I will kill him.
Why should we kill the one who brought my daughter back to me?
I believe he killed her. I believe he lies when he says there were others who killed her.
If he killed her, why would he bring her back?
Remember, this is Dilobananta. He has killed many of our people. I believe we should kill him. Then we should take up the path of war and kill the others who have come to our land.
Globinanta killed your brother, so you are angry. But your brother was making war against the white man, and those who kill in war are honorable. I believe Globinanta to be such a man. He is an enemy of great honor.
He is a white devil, and I say kill him now.
The Pari, a medicine man known for his wisdom, held up his hands to call for both to be quiet.
I have the answer. We will ask Globinanta to find the white men who did this to Yaakos Khan. He will find them and kill them. then return to us with word that he has done so.
How will we know he has killed them? He is a man of deceit. He might say that he has killed them when he has not.
We will make him prove that he has killed them. We will ask him to bring their scalps so that we might see them.
A white man will not scalp another white man.
I believe if I ask this of him, he will do it.
Call him from the wiki up and ask him. He will say no.
I will not ask him before others. I will ask him alone.
No. If he says he will not do so, I think you will not tell us.
Kitano glared at Chitopa. Chitopa was younger and stronger, but he had just questioned the veracity of his chief, and in doing so was stepping into very dangerous ground, for Kitano had many who would fight for him.
Do you say that I lie?
No. I call back the words I spoke. I do not believe the great chief Kitano would lie.
Kitano glared at him for a moment longer. Then he looked at Lipari.
Lipari, you may come with me and watch and listen as I question Globinanta. Then you can bear witness that what I will tell the council is true.
Kitano and Lipari arose and went to the wiki. Falcon stood, not only to show the Indians respect, but also to be ready for any contingency.
We have talked about you.
Kitano, do the people believe that I killed Yako's gun?
No. Chitopa has said this, but I do not think that even he believes you killed my daughter. But Chitopa and others want to kill you anyway, and they want to take up the path of war against the whites.
Why do you wish to take up the path of war?
You have seen our water. Once the water was wide and so deep that one had to find places to cross. Then the white men built a dam to steal the water, and now we have but a small amount. Our horses and our cattle die of thirst. And sometimes, if we go long without rain, there is no water in the stream at all, and even our people die of thirst.
Kitano, I must tell you that if you take up the path of war, this time the white man will not stop. His soldiers will kill all of you, not just the warriors, but the women and children as well. Your numbers are small now. When the war is finished, there'll be no Apache left.
I think there is a way to not have war, if you will help. We want you to find the men who killed Yaakos Khan, and kill them.
Well, that I will do with pleasure.
There is something else. When you kill these men, we want you to take their scalps and bring them to us, so that we may see that you have done as you said.
Kitano, I'll find him and kill him. But I will not scalp him.
You must, for it is the only way the council will know that you have done as you promised. And only if the council knows that the evil ones are dead will I be able to keep the village from following Chitopa on the path of war.
Oh, I'm sorry. Scalping ain't something I do.
Did you not take the scalp and gouge out the eyes of many of our young warriors during your war with Naiche?
Falcon was caught, and he knew it. He had done that very thing. In part out of anger, and in part to send a message to the Indians.
Yeah, I did scalp your people.
You took the scalps of our people, but you will not take the scalps of these evil men? Are these evil ones not as evil as the Apache you killed?
Kitano, the Apache I killed were not evil. They were just warriors fighting me.
Fargo Ford is evil. Then why will you scalp my people who are not evil? But you will not scalp the white men who are evil. Why do you laugh?
Kitano, you should be a lawyer. I believe you could get a light sentence for old Satan himself. All right, then, you win. I will chase Fargo Ford and his group down, and I will kill them. And I will bring you their scalps to prove that I have.
That is good. Come, we will tell the council. Then you will be free to go.
Falcon followed Kitano back to the council fire. Most of the Indians were still there, though by now as many were standing as were sitting. Chitopa was with a group of five or six rather fierce-looking young men. The expression on his face was one of anger and hate, and regardless of what Kitano promised or what Falcon did, Falcon knew that he was going to have to deal with Chitopa eventually.
Hear these words! I have spoken with Globinanta, and he has said that he will find the evil ones
and he will kill them.
And he will bring the scalps back as proof?
Yes. He has said that he will do this.
Let the council hear him say this in his own words.
Is the word of your chief not good enough for you?
It is not the word of Catano that I question. It is the word of Delo Bonanta, killer of Apache. I will not believe you unless I hear the words you speak.
Catano has told you of the words that I spoke. You do not wish to believe me, and I think you would not do so no matter what I said.
We will not speak of this again. I have told you what Globinanta said. Do you say that I am lying?
I do not say that you are lying.
You are free to leave, Globinanta. Go now and find the evil ones. Kill them, as you have said. Then bring their scalps back so that we may all see.
Standing just outside the edge of the circle, Falcon saw a young Indian boy holding the two horses he had come in with. His horse was already saddled. Falcon walked to his horse and swung into the saddle. Then the boy handed him the reins of the second horse. Falcon shook his head, then looked at Catano.
Keep this horse. This is a gift to you, to express my grief over the death of your daughter.
Catano merely nodded. Falcon rode out of the village, fighting the urge to break into a gallop, dependent upon Catano's honor to keep Chitopa from shooting him in the back. It didn't take too long before he disappeared entirely. A fly landed on Fargo Ford's face. Without waking up, he brushed it off. The second time it landed, it woke him up. He lay there for just a second to get his bearings, then he realized where he was. Last night he had brought Carmelita to his room. He had kept the horror all to himself, telling the others to share Rosita. Turning his head, he saw her in bed beside him. The bedsheet came up only to her waist. In the bright light of the morning sun, she didn't look nearly as attractive to him as she had last night. The dissipation of her profession was beginning to show, and she looked older now than last night, and there was a scar across one of her breasts. Fargo pulled on his boots, strapped on his gun, and picked up his saddlebag.
Well, I guess I'll be getting my pards and moving on. We got a ways to...
Fargo got a funny look on his face. He hefted the saddlebags again. His eyes narrowed, and he quickly opened the flap and looked inside.
Where's my money?
¿Qué?
You heard me. My money, you ignorant bitch. Where's my money? You stole my money.
Señor, no entiendo. What are you talking about? I know nothing about your money.
Fargo ripped the sheet off the bed and shoved Carmelita to the floor. Seeing nothing on the bed, he pushed the mattress off so he could look under the bed. Money wasn't there.
Where is the money?
Por favor, ayúdenme. El gringo trata de matarme.
Where's my money?
Turning to the door, Fargo saw the bartender rushing in, holding a shotgun. Fargo fired first. By now, the others, except for Ponce, were out in the hallway, guns in hand. All were in their underwear. Casey walked over to look down at the bartender. The bartender lay on his back in a pool of blood.
Fargo, what the hell happened? What'd you shoot him for?
This bitch stole our money. He must have been in on it because he come running in with that scattergun.
The whore didn't steal the money. Don't you remember? You put all the money in Ponce's saddlebag last night. You said being as how he was the only one who wouldn't be with a woman, it would be safer there.
I'll be goddamned all to hell. You're right.
Fargo looked over at Carmelita, who was using the edge of the sheet to wipe the blood away from her face.
Oh, look, I'm sorry about all this. I forgot I gave all the money to Ponce. I thought you stole it.
Usted es un bastardo. Usted es el hijo del diablo.
Yeah, well, I guess you got a right to be mad. Where's Ponce?
Well, since we was all going to be busy, he got a room by himself.
Fargo walked over to the room Dagan indicated and tried to open the door. It was locked.
Ponce! Ponce! You still alive? Ponce! Well, what do you know? Old Ponce must have died during the night. Back up, Dagan, I'll kick the door in. Nothing to it, flimsy-ass door. What the hell?
The bed in the room was not only empty, it showed no signs of ever having been slept in.
Son of a bitch! Where's Pouncey? You think he wandered off somewhere and died?
No, Casey. I think the son of a bitch ran off and took our money.
How the hell could he do that? The bastard could hardly sit up on his own, let alone take our money and run.
Fargo, you ain't behind this, are you?
What? Are you saying I took the money?
I'm just saying I'm wondering about it.
Yeah, me too.
Although Dagan didn't say anything, he stepped over to stand beside the others. Fargo could handle any one of them by himself. That was why he was a leader. But even he couldn't handle all three of them if they turned against him.
Look, fellas, I don't know how Pouncey pulled this off. Maybe he wasn't near as bad as he let on. Or maybe he was just soused down with that laudanum and figured to take his chance. But I didn't have nothing to do with this.
So what do we do now?
Now? We run the son of a bitch down, kill him, and take the money. I mean, faking it or not, he's more dead than alive. How damn hard can it be to find him?
When Falcon rode into Oro Blanco that morning, his reception was exactly as it had been when he rode into the Indian camp. Because everyone had known of his mission, nearly everyone in the town came out of houses and stores to stand on the boardwalk and watch him. By the time he reached the sheriff's office, Sheriff Corbin was standing out front to greet him. Falcon dismounted and tied his horse off at the hitching rail. The townspeople who had followed him as he rode into town now gathered in the street around the sheriff's office to find out what had happened.
Well, I'll be damned. Here you are, back again and all in one piece, you see?
Yeah, still alive. I personally delivered the Indian girl to her parents.
Did you see old Kitano himself?
Captain Kitano asked when you brung his daughter back to him.
I had no trouble. Yes, I did see Kitano. And he was like any other parent would be at having their daughter's body delivered to him. He was grieved, and he was upset.
Would you like some coffee, Mr. McAllister? I got some fresh made just inside. Come on in and have a cup.
Falcon welcomed the sheriff's offer of coffee for what it was, an invitation for him to talk more privately.
Don't mind if I do.
How are they gonna act now? They holding the girl's killing against all of us?
Now listen, folks. Y'all gone now. Haven't you got something else to do?
Now, Sheriff, we by damn got us a right to know if there's gonna be an Indian war or not, and you ain't got no right to keep us in the dark.
Now quiet down! I have no intention of keeping you in the dark, but there ain't no way Mr. McAllister can get told what all he has to be told with all you standing around here shouting at him. If there is something you need to know, I'll tell you first thing. But for now, there ain't none of you gonna find out anything unless I find it out first. Now get on back to your business, all of you. Come on inside, Falcon. I'll pour you that coffee.
Falcon followed the sheriff inside and sat down in a chair, moved his hat, and ran his hand through his hair.
Thanks for getting me away from the mob.
How's that wound of yours? I see you're running your hand across it. Is it bothering you any?
No, not really. It's just force of habit, I guess.
So, are we? Gonna have us an Indian war, I mean.
Not if I can help it.
Good Lord, man, you mean the issue is in doubt?
I had to promise Kitano and the council that I would track down the men who killed his daughter.
Well, that's understandable. We have even more reasons to track them down now. Turns out when they escaped from jail back in Calabasas, they killed the sheriff and both his deputies. We just got word of it today.
So counting the expressmen back in Calabasas, the sheriff, his two deputies, the shotgun guard and cloud dancer, that makes six people they've killed just in the last few days. They've really been on a tear.
Six that we know of. There's no telling what they might have done since they left here.
Sheriff Corbin walked over to his desk, opened the drawer, and pulled out a star.
You may recollect that I offered this to you before when you took the girl back to the Indian village. I reckon you were right to say no then. But I'm offering it to you again. I wish you'd take it.
I'm sorry, Sheriff, but I'm gonna have to turn it down again. What I have to do, the law wouldn't want no part of. And I wouldn't want to put the burden of my action on the law.
What are you talking about? Hunting down those folks? Even hunting them down and killing them would be doing the work of the law.
Sheriff, if I'm wearing that badge, I would be honor-bound to try and bring them in alive for trial.
Well, yes, I suppose you would if you could, but the truth is, these are desperate and dangerous men.
So I doubt that anyone would fault you if you don't bring them in alive.
I'm gonna be truthful with you, Sheriff. I don't have any intention of bringing them back alive. I plan to track them down and kill them. All of them.
There are five of them. There's only one of you.
By now, there's probably only four. And even if Ponch is still alive, I expect he's pretty much out of it.
Sheriff Corbin stood there for a moment, rolling the star over in his hand. Then he nodded and put the star back in the drawer.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You don't need a star for that. I suppose that was part of your deal with the Indians?
Yeah.
Well, if it prevents war, then I say kill the bastards. Better them dead than some of the good citizens of Pima County. That's what would happen if the Indians go on the warpath.
I thought you might say it that way. But, that's not all there is to the promise.
What do you mean, that isn't all there is to the promise? You're gonna track them down and you're gonna kill them. What else would old Catano be wanting you to do?
I'm gonna scalp them.
You're planning to scalp white men? God in heaven, man, why would you do such a thing?
I told you. It's part of the promise I made to Catano.
Well, to hell with him. Killing them murdering bastards is one thing, but killing them and then scalping them, that's something else again. That ain't something white men do to one another. It ain't civilized.
No, it ain't. But if you think about it, after I kill them, they'll be dead. So it won't make any difference to Fargo Ford and his bunch whether I scalp them or not. And it might prevent an Indian war. Turns out Catano isn't the only one we have to worry about. He's got a young buck in his band named Chitopa.
Chitopa, yes, it would be him. I've never had any real run-ins with him, but he's come off the reservation a few times to harass some freight wagons, scare the passengers and the stagecoaches. As far as I know, that's all he's ever done. Unless he's the one who killed those three prospectors.
I'd be willing to bet on it.
So what you're telling me is that even if you track down and kill Fargo Ford and his gang, the Indians, or at least Chitopa, might still go on the warpath?
If I don't do this, it won't only be Chitopa on the warpath. It'll be Catano, too. And I have a feeling that if Catano ever went bad, it would be Geronimo all over again.
Ponce Elliott's leg hurt him. There was no denying the pain that had by now infested his whole leg. But he wasn't nearly as crippled or as out of it as he had been pretended to be. Although it was painful to do so, he could still walk and ride and stay alert. Ponce had exaggerated his condition around the others to put him off guard. He hadn't even been hitting the laudanum as hard as everyone thought, but he was saving it for later when he would need it. This entire ruse was all part of his plan to steal the money. Last night, the opportunity was handed to him on a silver platter.
What do you think about that, horse? They were gonna leave me and Oro Blanco without the money. Well, let's see how they like it now. Damn me. If I wouldn't enjoy being a fly on the wall when old Fargo discovers his money's all gone.
Ponce had ridden out of town right after midnight and rode hard through the long dark hours, putting as much distance between himself and Sasabe Flat as he could. Now, as the sun rose over the Kigatoa Mountains, he slowed his horse to a more leisurely pace. Back in Sasabe Flat, Fargo, Dagan, Casey, and Monroe hurried down to the livery to claim their horses. That was when they saw that Ponce's horse was gone.
Son of a bitch! I didn't think the bastard could even get mounted without help.
Hey, stableman, come here.
The stableman was an older man with white hair and a white beard.
Si, senor?
Lerone, where'd it go?
I do not know, senor. I did not see him leave.
What do you mean, you ignorant bastard? It's your job to see people leave when they take a horse.
I do not know, senor.
You don't know shit. Let's get saddled and get after him.
Get after him how? You don't even know which way he went.
Yeah, we know which way he went. He went north.
How do you know that?
I know that he did, because he's got himself a whore up in Mesquite. I'm guessing he figures he can get up there, lay low with his whore while he's getting his leg fixed, and we won't know nothing about it.
Yeah, he's talked about that whore from time to time. But who knows if she's real? I mean, when you think about it,
I can't picture Ponce with no woman, whore or otherwise.
Most of the time that's true. But I know that this one is real. She's my sister.
Your sister?
Come on! Get your asses in the saddle and let's go!
Within minutes after saddling and mounting, Fargo Ford and the others were riding north out of Sasabe Flat. By now, it was incredibly hot, and even the breeze, what little there was of it, emphasized the terrible heat.
I'm gonna kill him! Do you hear me, Ponce, you son of a bitch? I'm gonna kill you!
Kitano!
Kitano sat up in his blankets in his wikia.
He is gone.
Who is gone?
Chitopa. He is gone, and he has taken 5 warriors with him. Will he make war?
He cannot make war. He can only make trouble.
Kitano sat there for a long moment, just staring ahead. His wife offered him breakfast.
Eat, my husband. You cannot be strong if you do not eat.
Yes. Then I must consider what to do.
Arnold Johnson drove the rented team and buckboard toward Arivica. He had 2 accounts in Arivica, which he normally serviced by a stagecoach. But after his run-in with Gentry, he would not be using that stagecoach again. They could just get their revenue somewhere else. They wouldn't get 1 more cent from Arnold Johnson or from Thurman Leather Goods. His samples were in the back of the buckboard. Plus, he was even carrying the fulfillment of 1 order. When he traveled by stage, all he could carry was a sample. He could never fulfill an order because there was rarely room for the extra baggage on the stage. And the more he thought about it, the more he believed that he should have been traveling this way all the time anyway. It was certainly more comfortable than being inside a hot airless coach box. And if he had to share another coach with someone like Falcon McAllister, well, he just didn't know what he'd do. He didn't know which had been worse, having to share the coach with McAllister or with that Indian woman.
There ought to be a damn law prohibiting Indians from traveling with white people. Well, they got one keeping coloreds from traveling with white people. Coloreds and Indians should know their place. And their place is definitely below a white man. Below a white man? Yeah, I'd like to have one of them below me right now.
Johnson rubbed himself as he thought of Cynthia, a black woman who had set herself up with her own crib back in Calabasas. Johnson was one of her best customers. Up in Harshaw, he was a frequent visitor to an Indian woman named Sasha. That Indian girl who'd been riding in the coach with him was prettier than either one of them. He thought of her naked, lying in the ditch, and he wished he'd gone up with McAllister to see her. He wondered if the men who took her had had their way with her.
I wonder what it would be like to be an outlaw. Completely free of all convention. Anytime I wanted a woman, I'd just take her. I wouldn't have to pay her neither. What would they call me? Johnson the Terrible. No, that's no good. Kid Johnson. Nah, that's no good either. Arnold the Outlaw. Get me. Arnold the Evil. 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 Arnold. Yeah. Evil Arnold.
For the next several minutes, as Arnold drove the buckboard, he fantasized himself as Evil Arnold, robbing banks and holding up stagecoaches, raping women. While one of his warriors held the reins to his horse, Chitopa slithered on his belly up to the crest of the ridge. Looking down onto the road that ran through the valley floor below, he saw a single buckboard occupied by only the driver. There appeared to be some things in the back of the wagon, though from this distance he had no idea what they were. He went back to the others and looked at the war party he had gathered. There were 5 of them, ranging in age from 16 to 30. Each warrior was in paint, having chosen his own particular design. Chitopa's war paint consisted of yellow around one eye, black around the other, and 3 red slashes on each cheek. It hadn't been hard to gather his band. Some he had known since they were boys growing up together. Others had come to the village during the breakup of the Chiricahua. All had a thirst for adventure, and most had their own reasons to hate the white man. Early that morning, he had walked through the village, calling for all who were brave of heart. These five had joined him, while the others, especially the older men, merely stared at him from the openings of their wickiers.
Will we attack this white man, Chitopa?
Yes. We will wait until he passes. Then, we will strike from behind.
So deep was Arnold Johnson into his fantasies that he didn't even see the Indians as they came up over the ridge and started after him. In fact, his first indication of danger was when one of them rode up right beside him on the left and another on the right. For a second, Johnson was shocked by their sudden and unexpected appearance. Then it became frightening. Yeah! The team broke into a gallop. The buckboard flew down the road, leaving behind it a billowing rooster tail of dust. The Indians easily kept pace with it, and as Johnson looked left and right, he saw that they were grinning, actually enjoying his tantrum. He was not armed, and he had no way to fight back. As soon as the Indians realized he wasn't armed, they rode ahead of him, still one to either side, and reached down to grab the harness of his team. The Indians slowed the team, trying to bring it to a halt. Buckboard just sat there, surrounded by the swirl of dust the wheels had stirred up, as the whole war party gathered around.
What do you want? Do you want the samples? You can have them, take them!
You should not have come here!
What do you mean I shouldn't have come here? This is a public road. I'm on my way to a river town.
Chitopa lifted his rifle. Johnson saw them all raise their rifles as one trained at him.
What the hell? No!
Johnson slumped forward, prevented from falling only by the footrest of the buckboard. Chitopa dismounted, drew his knife, and advanced toward the body. Grabbing the dead white man by his hair, he made the scalping cut. The others denied the scalp, took out their anger, and left their mark by further disfiguring the body. By now, the pain Ponce was feeling was so severe that it was almost unbearable. Every step his horse made transferred a shooting pain up his leg and into the rest of his body. He had half a bottle of laudanum left, but he didn't want to use it. Not yet. Up ahead, he saw what he'd been looking for, and he guided his horse toward an unusual rock formation, an obelisk with two round stones at the bottom. What made the rock formation particularly significant now was the fact that Ponce knew it shielded a cave from view. Ponce needed the cave as a means of getting out of the sun, staying out of sight, and providing a place to recuperate after he did what had to be done. Once in the cave, Ponce climbed down from his horse, removed the horse's saddle, then secured him. After that, he started a small fire and took his knife out and cut his pants leg off just above his right knee. He took off his boot and slid the cut sleeve of the pants leg down and off.
Oh, damn.
From the knee down, the leg was blue. The wound was puffy, with abscesses and dead flesh all around it. Ponce put the knife blade in the fire.
Come on, Ponce. How damn hard can it be? Hell, when you were butchering, you'd cut off a dozen legs a day.
Ponce fortified himself with a few swigs of laudanum, making sure to hold some back for later. Then he took the knife from the fire and looked at his leg just below the knee.
Of course, them legs was on cows or pigs. This'll be the first time I ever cut my own leg off.
Holding his breath, he started to cut. There was a comforting familiarity to the interior of a general store. It was full of the scent of coffee beans, ground flour, smoked meat, and various spices. The shelves behind the clerk's counter were colorful displays of can labels advertising beans, peaches, peas, and tomatoes. A long string of peppers hung from a nail, adding their own aroma. Falcon was buying the supplies he would need on the trail of Fargo Ford and the others.
Will there be anything else for you, Mr. McAllister?
Let's see. Bacon, flour, beans, coffee, salt, matches, tobacco. Do you have any whorehound candy?
Whorehound, is it? Yes, sir, I believe I do. How many sticks do you want?
Around 20, if you have that many.
Turn out! Turn out! Everyone, turn out!
What in the world's going on out there?
I don't know. I'll have a look.
Falcon walked to the front window and looked out onto the street, which was beginning to fill with the citizens of Oro Blanco.
It's just a bunch of people milling about. I'll go out there and have a look. What do I owe you?
Sheriff Corbin stepped inside. The clerk looked up as he did so.
I'll be right with you, Sheriff. I'm just finishing up here. Mr. McAllister, it looks like the whole thing is going to come to $6.40.
Put it on my bill, Mr. Dobbins. As he is doing a job for the city, I just got authorization from the city council. Give him anything he wants.
Very good, Sheriff, if you say so.
Sheriff, what's all the commotion out there?
Do you know that harness drummer Johnson? Arnold Johnson, I think his name is. He's from Calabasas.
Yeah, I know him. We came into town on the same stage. Not a pleasant man.
Yesterday, Mr. Johnson rented a team and a buckboard from the livery. His plan was to go up to Arivica and call on some of his clients up there. Evidently, he ran into trouble on the way up. This morning, the rented team came back into town, pulling the buckboard.
Without Johnson?
No. Johnson came with him, all right. Dead. He don't look pretty. The thing is, I don't know if it was done by Indians or by someone who wanted to make us think it was Indians.
Let me take a look.
He's still in the buckboard over at the livery. I told the undertaker to keep him there until you got a look at him. I figured you'd be able to tell a bit more about what happened than the rest of us.
Well, let's get...
When Falcon followed the sheriff out, he saw that a rather substantial crowd of people had gathered in the street at the front of the livery.
Looks like the whole town has turned out.
Not much happens in Oro Blanco. You folks make way. Let us through here.
Crowd separated enough to let Sheriff Corbin and Falcon pass. When they approached the buckboard in front of the livery, they saw that a tarpaulin had been pulled over the body. A liveryman stood by the buckboard.
Well, pull the tarp back. I want to have a look.
It ain't pretty, mister.
Hold on a minute, Jimmy. Now, some of you already know this fella has been butchered up pretty good. So if there's anyone among you that's got a queasy stomach and don't want to see this, I'd advise you to turn your heads now. I'm sorry to do this, but we've got to take a look.
The liveryman put his hands back on the tarp and looked up at the sheriff. Corbin nodded, and the liveryman pulled the tarp back. Johnson was lying on his back. His face had been mutilated, one of his hands removed, and his stomach had been split open. He had also been scalped. Falcon examined the method by which the scalp was taken. The knife cut had started in the forehead and made a complete circle around to the back of the neck. Following the cut, the hair was jerked off the top of the head. This was, Falcon knew, the way the Apaches scalped their victims. Falcon looked into Johnson's inside jacket pocket and pulled out a billfold. When he opened the billfold, he found $40 in cash. He held the money up for the sheriff to see.
Damn. Whoever did it didn't rob him, did they?
They sure as hell didn't. All right, you can recover him now.
The liveryman pulled the tarp back over Johnson's body. Falcon walked away without saying a word, leaving the crowd behind him.
It wasn't Ford, was it? Otherwise, he would have took the money. Damn. I should have checked that first thing myself.
No. It was Indians.
Does this mean that Katana's gone on the warpath?
Not necessarily. If I had to guess, I would say this is Chitopa's doing. Chitopa and whatever handful he's managed to get to ride with him.
Nevertheless, I'd better ride up to Fort Lowell and let the army know about this.
I'll go with you.
I thought you were going after Fargo Ford and his bunch.
I am. But for the moment, it's clear that Chitopa represents the most danger to the people that live around here. So I think the first thing I'd better do is go after Chitoba.